Experimental cancer cures, the hierbas that Abuelita told you to take for an upset stomach, the ghost hunters on TV. There's no scientific proof behind any of these, but they fascinate us just the same. I'm Norma Martinez, and for David Martin Davies, today on The Source, we'll explore pseudoscience, as well as some of the traditions and superstitions of the region. Joining me today are Mark Gifford, lecturer in the Writing Corps program at the University of Texas at San Antonio. He teaches a course in rhetoric of pseudoscience. Dennis Ugolini, chair of the Physics and Astronomy Department at Trinity University. He's taught courses on pseudoscience and critical thinking. And we also have Yuli Ortiz, manager of Papa Jim's Botanica, which is a local emporium that sells the saints, statues, candles, and other items considered by some San Antonians to be magical. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, first of all, let's begin with a definition of pseudoscience. Dennis Ugolini, we'll begin with you.
The most important thing separating science and pseudoscience is if it defies criticism. Pseudoscience is intentionally stated in a way that it cannot be falsified. If you find a way to criticize a belief, then the goalposts are shifted and you say, oh, well, no, I actually meant this other thing. Whereas science is defined in a way where you make a prediction, you then test to see if that prediction comes true. And if it does not, then you have to revise your theories accordingly.
And Mark, you teach a course in the rhetoric of pseudoscience. Tell me a little bit more why that differs from, you know, the basic scientific core knowledge of science.
Sure. I think in my class, what we're concerned with is how people, how pseudoscientists or people who are purveyors of pseudoscience, how they're able to convince their audience that the stuff they're selling is, or the stuff that they're promoting is scientific when it's not. Like Dennis said, you know, one of the primary tenets of science is that something needs to be falsifiable. And a lot of their claims simply are not. There's no way to falsify some of their claims. So how are they able to persuade people? You know, rhetoric is just the study of persuasion. And so what I'm concerned with is how these people are able to persuade their audience that, you know, that their stuff works.
And we are also going to be speaking with Yuli Ortiz here, the manager of Papa Jim's Botanica. And Yuli, if you could tell us a little bit about what a botanica is.
A botanica is a place where you're going to find any type of natural remedy, anywhere from herbs, natural liquids. You can also find saint statues of any type of religion you can think of. We carry all types of incense, powders, perfumes, whether it's for, again, natural remedies or any type of culture that you follow. So that's more of the what we carry in our store.
Our call to you, we have you to ask questions to our panel of guests. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Yuli, talking about the botanica here, what kind of people do you see coming into your stores? Do you have a lot of regular customers or people who just sort of wander in looking for a particular thing? Or maybe they're just curious off the street. What is that giant Santa Muerte doing there in the middle of the store?
we do have our regular customers. We have long time customers, people that have been coming into a store for 10, 15 years already. And we do have a lot of new customers as well every single day. The botanica business, believe it or not, grows and grows every year. Here in San Antonio, in the Southside area specifically, we have botanicas probably at every street that you can think of in the Southside. The customers that come in are customers that have known Papa Jim's from generation and generation that they've had. The botanica business itself basically brings in customers that are having troubles with anything, whether it's their business, it's their health, their love life. The customers that we do have for long periods of times are people that come looking for herbs, that come looking for that natural remedy because it worked once, so they want to repeat the effect, not just with them, but with their husband, with the wife, with the kids, with the grandkids. So it's just a chain that continues on generation to generation.
So, Mark, obviously pseudoscience, just the word itself, just denotes that this is not real science. But the people who have these beliefs, like in the herbs and the hierbas and many of the things that Yuli sells in her stores, they still have this hardcore belief that it's going to work. I know in your course, your Rhetoric of Pseudoscience course, you do explore that fact. Why do so many people continue to believe in something despite the fact that there's really no evidence behind it?
That's such a big question. There's so many different ways to answer that, but I always go back to Carl Sagan in the book The Demon Haunted World, where he says that a lot of this stuff just fulfills emotional needs that aren't being met in other ways. So a lot of times people are out there searching either for a sense of control, or maybe their health isn't good. They're searching for something that they're not getting from society in some way. And so they reach out to these pseudoscientific answers. Sometimes these pseudosciences supply them with answers. My question, though, is it the correct answer? And in my head, the correct answer absolutely matters. And so whether or not they're receiving a benefit from something, whether it's a placebo effect or whatever, in my head, it's better that people know the truth than to, you know, base their beliefs on something that just isn't true.
Again, this is a community conversation. Give us a call at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at tpr.org, or you can tweet at tprsource. Now, Dennis, we have often heard from people who have very strong beliefs in pseudoscience that this particular idea that science has proven, it's only a theory. Can you describe what a scientific theory is and why we call it that?
I like to tell my students that we don't call things laws anymore because we're not arrogant enough to think that it's going to last forever. A theory is the prevailing idea we have that has met all testable attempts up until that point. So technically we call it the theory of gravity. I think we pretty much accept that gravity is a thing right now. If I drop the card I'm holding in my hand, exhibit A, it falls to the ground. But we're constantly refining theories as we get more and more experimental evidence. When we look at things on a cosmic scale, we see the effects of Einstein's theory of relativity, and so we have to include that. But when we call something a theory, it doesn't mean we're not at all confident about it. It means we're never going to be totally sure, because you can never test every possible application of a theory. We just continue making tests, continue running experiments and refining our theories so they fit better and better over time.
And people who debunk the theory idea, I mean, the theory of gravitational pull is keeping us glued to our seats here. And of course, atomic theory is what's holding us all together.
And one of the things, too, that Stephen Jay Gould wrote in a really famous article is that there's a difference between facts and theories. So Stephen Jay Gould would say that something like what Dennis was just saying, if he throws his pen in the air and it falls to the ground, that is a fact. But theories explain how facts happen, right? So the theory of gravity explains why, when you throw your pen into the air, that it falls to the ground. You know, it's a fact. If I come into contact with someone who's ill, I might get sick. Germ theory explains why that might happen. It's a fact that species evolved, and the theory of evolution explains that.
We're going to come right back, but again, we're waiting for your phone call at 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We'll be getting to Robert Brevik and Roberto here in this next segment. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Norma Martinez in for David Martin Davies. In the studio, Mark Gifford, who lectures in the Writing Corps program at the University of Texas at San Antonio, teaching a course in the Rhetoric of Pseudoscience. We also have Dennis Ugolini here of Trinity University's Physics and Astronomy Department, who also teaches a course on pseudoscience and critical thinking. Yuli Ortiz is here. She's the manager of Papa Jim's Botanica, which is a local emporium that sells a lot of magical items. And we, of course, want to invite you into the conversation, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at tpr.org, the source, rather, at tpr.org. You can also tweet us at tprthesource. And we're going to the call right now. We're going to hear from Robert. Good morning, Robert. You've had some experiences with natural herbs in Germany. Well, Robert, are you
there? Well, yes, yes, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, no, I was in Germany let's see, 25 years ago with the Army, but then I went back this year, my family, and then we noticed that there's still a lot of, like, they're like grocery, they're like pharmacies, I think they call apotecas, but where they sell all these botanical herbs and remedies, and it's a science. I mean, it's not a mom and pop thing, it's virtual science they've got over there. They use a lot of natural remedies. So to me, it seems like it's a formalized medical treatment system that they utilize compared to this pseudo stuff that you're mentioning and compared to regular, you know, modern medicine. So,
well, Yuli, I think this call probably goes to you. And what kind of parallel are you seeing here from Robert's story of the German herbal pharmacies? Obviously, there's something to the fact that certain herbs can make you feel better if you take them for a particular reason.
That is correct. And yes, he is totally right. When it comes to herbs and their medicinal purposes, there's an infinity of herbs that you can use for lots and lots and lots of diseases and just anything, any illness that you can think of. When it comes to cancer, when it comes to migraine, when it comes to a simple flu, there are a lot of herbs that can be used. And I understand that these are never going to take the effect that medicine will, and there has nothing that has been proven. There has been no science that has been proven to being able to cure the disease or any illness that we might be talking about. I don't know if it's faith, maybe, or maybe it is just something in the herb itself that is going to cure the person. Even when it comes to medication itself, people say the side effects that, you know, the medication might have on a person are not the same side effects that it might have on another person. But then again, our medication, our medicinal herbs, they also have the side effects. They also have those miracles that work each time for them. So I am not sure if we can say that they are miracle workers. What I can tell you is for the 12, 15 years that I've been in the business, I have seen people that come back to get their herbs and they work. I have seen anywhere from just a simple manzanilla herb taking away a stomach ache to the moringa herb, which is one of our highest on demand right now, cure or relieve just any type of cancer pains. People with the energy to go into their next chemo and saying, you know, after I come out of my chemo, this is the only thing that gets me up and going again. So, again, whether it's scientifically proven or not, we know, we see it every single day, it works.
Well, it's unusual because those herbs obviously are available in most markets here, but marijuana is not. And marijuana has been, if I'm not mistaken, or at least some elements of marijuana are proven, I could correct me if I'm wrong, Mark or Dennis, that they can relieve symptoms of glaucoma, of illness from side effects from chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. One of the important things when I tell my students when they're researching alternative medicines and health food stores and things like that, one of the important things I tell my students is that, number one, lots of things are natural. Just because something natural doesn't mean it's good for you. Arsenic is natural. So
is uranium in the water, right?
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, just because something is labeled as natural does not necessarily mean it's a good thing. The other thing is that some of these home remedies, yeah, they absolutely work. So if you chew on the bark of a willow tree with a sore tooth, your tooth will get better. That's because it's an NSAID, right? But we took that willow tree bark and we distilled it down into actual aspirin, which works way better. If you have a sunburn, you can put aloe vera on it. You can break an aloe vera plant and put it on it, but lidocaine works way better. So yeah, some of these natural remedies actually work, but we have things that work better. There are other natural remedies like homeopathy, however, that just have zero scientific backing and are completely relying on the placebo effect.
Well, describe homeopathy for us in case people aren't familiar with that.
So homeopathy is it's a very specific form of what you would call natural medicine, and it's the belief that like cures like. So a homeopath would tell you if you have watery eyes, something like onion juice would help watery eyes. And they also believe that if you dilute something, it becomes more powerful. And they dilute stuff to such a degree that chemically, there can't even be a single molecule of the original substance left. And so they would take one drop of onion juice and put it in 10 drops of water, and then they would take one drop of that solution and put it in to another 10 drops of water and keep doing that until they get to a point where, well, there's no molecule of the original substance left. And they take it and they say that it works, but all the research shows it can be nothing but placebo.
Well, we're going to take a call from Roberto right now. Roberto, you have a question about doctors prescribing supplements?
Actually, I have just a couple of comments, and you just touched on one of them. The first is that almost all the medicines we have are plant-derived. The second is doctors of functional medicine specifically, and this is a quick personal anecdote. I know someone who was having heart problems. She went to cardiologists and other doctors, and they were trying to prescribe anxiety medication and stuff like this. But doctors of functional medicine test blood on cellular level instead of a serum level, and therefore they are able to see exactly what vitamins and minerals your body is lacking, like magnesium and iron and all these things. And so the prescription of supplements through those doctors, I think, is far more effective than what seems to be a lot of doctors who are kind of being lazy and just seeing the same kind of symptoms over and over and prescribing anti-anxiety and antidepressant medication just because that's what they're used to. But I think we need to get into more of this natural replacement of minerals, and they're even doing so much research on the microbiome, and it's all about what we have in our bodies and what we need to replace.
Thank you so much, Roberto. Dennis, you have any comments?
Yeah, I think it's important to specify when we're talking about something being scientifically proven, what we're saying is we are definitely convinced that cause A produces effect B, and we've ruled out everything else that might be tied into it. I think acupuncture is a good example of that. People who have acupuncture treatments a number of them will claim that they have had a long-term reduction in pain. But think of how many confounding variables are thrown in there. You're lying down. It's quite relaxing. There's candles. There's music. There is some evidence that when your body has built up a resistance to chronic pain and stops producing the chemicals to alleviate it, that if you introduce a secondary source of pain, it will kickstart the production of those chemicals again. Any of these could be a related effect. So even though it has nothing to do with unblocking your lines of chi, something positive could be happening in there. When we talk about the difference between science and pseudoscience, science is how can I design a test to figure out which one of those effects it is? Pseudoscience is I say it's this, and that's the end of it.
I think we have a really interesting clip by the amazing Randy. His name is James Randy, in case you're not familiar with him. He's an 89-year-old magician and skeptic who has debunked very famous people like Uri Geller and many other psychics and palm readers, etc. And he had something interesting to say about pseudoscience.
Why then do so many of us suspend our judgment so that we can be scammed by people who would sell us felt insoles with embedded magnets? Merchandisers who will prescribe a gel stick with no active ingredients in it that we rub on our foreheads because we're told that headaches can thus be relieved. Or a guru who says that if we take his course, we'll be able to fly just by thinking deeply about it. Enjoy the fantasy, the fun, the stories, but make sure that there's a clear, sharp line drawn on the floor so that you can step back behind that mark and re-embrace reality. To do otherwise is to embrace madness.
So what Randy's saying here is it's okay to occasionally, enjoy the occasional deep dive into pseudoscience, but just don't get trapped in it. Do you have any comments, Mark?
Yeah, I completely agree. One of the things that I try to tell my students is, you know, we talk about what is the, when we talk about ethical arguments, what's the ethics of allowing someone to believe that something works when it doesn't, if they're receiving a placebo effect and they think that it's working? So, like, what's the danger of that? You know, I have students constantly say, well, if they're receiving a benefit from it, I don't want to take that away from them. But in my head, magic just begets more magic. Magical thinking begets more magical thinking, and eventually you'll find something that magical thinking doesn't work on. Steve Jobs is the absolute perfect example of that. Steve Jobs was into acupuncture, he was into juice cleanses, he was into all this herbal supplements and things like that, so much so that he didn't really like his medical doctors. And when he was diagnosed with cancer, pancreatic cancer, which was a really rare kind. So normally pancreatic cancer is a killer because it's asymptomatic up until it's metastasized. His was a very rare kind, though. It was a neuroendocrine tumor or an islet cell. And basically, oncologists say if you can get clear margins and take it out, you have a very, very good chance of surviving. But when he got this diagnosis, he had been, again, an acupuncturist and all this stuff for so many years. His first inclination was to go with natural medicine. And he did this against the advice of his physicians for over 9 months, during which time that normally easily operable cancer metastasized and eventually killed him. So in my head, magical thinking will just beget more magical thinking.
Well, Yuli, you were talking earlier about how some people will go into your store and they look for certain items that will probably relieve their symptoms. Have people come to you looking for advice saying, you know, my mom or a loved one or I have a cancer and I'm looking for a way to help cure it or to make it perhaps not as severe as it is? What kind of advice do you give somebody who's really on the cusp of desperation?
The first advice that we always, or the first comment that comes out of our mouths all the time, and this goes for anybody that works at our place, nothing, like I mentioned before, is going to replace medicine. There will be herbs that are going to help give you the energy that you need. There's nothing that's going to completely cure cancer, and that's just one of the things that we have to let every single customer that comes in our store know. We do get a lot of desperate people that are just in the verge of just letting go and not wanting to continue with their chemos, not continue with any medication for any purpose. Like I mentioned before, we have customers that come in taking 20, 30 pills a day. People that don't want to be dosed off or drugged all day, all night, and it's just, we are the alternative for that. When they come into our store, we have to let them know everything that you see here, any herb that, you know, would help with your illness, it's only going to do that. It's only going to help. It's only going to contribute to whatever medication you are already taking. The last thing that we tell our customer is, you need to continue going to the doctor. You need to continue checking up on whatever it is that, you know, is affecting your health, because nothing that we have here is going to completely cure an illness. It's not going to completely cure what you're feeling. The only thing that it's going to do, it's going to make it, it's going to give you a relief. It's going to help you have the energy to continue moving on with whatever illness that you have. So that's what we have.
This is a community conversation. If you have a question, please call us at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Do you have any experience with alternative or fringe practices, theories, or belief? We'll be getting into some of those after the break. Astrology, acupuncture, crystal healing. If you have any experience with those, give us a call at 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org or find us on Twitter. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source.
The intellectual foundations of astrology were swept away 300 years ago. And yet, astrology is still taken seriously by a great many people. Have you ever noticed how easy it is to find a magazine on astrology? Virtually every newspaper in America has a daily column on astrology. Almost none of them have even a weekly column on astronomy. People wear astrological pendants, check their horoscopes before leaving the house. Even our language preserves an astrological consciousness. For example, take the word disaster. It comes from the Greek for bad star. The Italians once believed that disease was caused by the influence of the stars. It's the origin of our word influenza.
So that's Carl Sagan, I believe, from one of his Cosmos episodes. And judging by that groovy music, that was done sometime in the 1970s. But we're going to talk about astrology right now. And Carl Sagan, I think, said it very well. And it's true to this day. Centuries after astrology had come into being, actually astrology back when it was founded, right, it was considered a science because not much was known about the stars. But even now, there are so many, especially young people. There was an article recently about millennials who they're turning away from God, but they're turning to astrology. And people think that perhaps it's because they're trying to fill that space that's being left in a vacuum because they are leaving sort of religion behind. We're talking today with Mark Gifford, who's in the writing department at the University of Texas at San Antonio. We have Dennis Ugolini here of the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Trinity University. Yuli Ortiz is here from Papa Jim's Botanica. She's the manager there. Dennis, what do you think you might want to add to Carl Sagan's description of astrology and why it's so popular right now?
Psychologists have identified that our brains tend to focus in on information that confirms what we already believe and tends to filter out things that contradict. And so I think astrology feeds into that because when you read a horoscope or a birth chart and you look at a description of a personality, you tend to hone in on the parts that say, yes, that is me right there on the page. And in the pseudoscience course that I teach at Trinity, one thing we do with our students is we take their birth date, their birth information, and I say, okay, I've drawn up birth charts for all of you. This is personal information, so, you know, read it, keep it to yourself, but decide if it describes you well or not. And typically 80 to 90% of them will say, yes, this is an excellent description. And then they'll start to share what parts of it they think describe them best. And it turns out they all have the same birth chart, and it will always be Charles Manson or whoever is president at the time and have nothing to do with them at all. But they're all convinced because they see what they want to see in those usually very positive descriptions.
And it's funny, you see the horoscopes, and it's maybe one or two sentences for every sign. And of course, not everybody who's under that particular sign, not every Sagittarius is going to have a great day. Maybe they're having a really terrible day at work, but that, for whatever reason, that reading will somehow speak to them. So, Mark, what do you have to add?
Well, there's a really easy experiment to do that. When somebody asks you to read their horoscope to them, read the wrong one and see if they say, oh, well, that's not me. You must have read the wrong one. No one will do that because those statements are designed to be so vague that they apply to everyone. The experiment that Dennis does in his class is similar to an experiment that's been done over and over throughout history where you create statements that are so vague that they apply to the human condition. So people will think it's them, but, well, it's just describing people.
Well, we're going to go to the phones. Again, we're a community conversation. The phones are pretty busy right now. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're going to go to Brevik right now. Brevik, what's your question? Good afternoon.
Hi, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Professor G. I'm Brevik, and I'm an A student of his at the current moment. And I was just wanted to ask about him personally, about how he approaches an argument or debate, like with a believer of a given pseudoscience, and how to be proactively unbiased and get your point across without, you know, coming off as that guy.
So first off, your topic proposal is due on Thursday, Brevik. Hopefully you get that in on time. It's always a tough thing. How do you approach someone rhetorically? How do you approach someone who's already dug in? And one of the things that you read online that's repeated over and over is that you can't logic someone out of a position they didn't logic themselves into in the first place. So the last thing that you should try to do is to throw facts and data at them because they didn't get to that position with facts and data. Usually I find it helpful if you're able to teach people about these cognitive biases, if you're able to teach people about the fallacies, then they begin to see them active in their own life. You know, there's a moment of clarity where they realize, oh, well, I just made a correlation versus causation error. But if you try to tell them, oh, that error just you just made, well, that they never, you know, people don't respond well to that. So the first thing is just making sure that people are scientifically literate, not memorizing facts and data, but understanding how the scientific process happens. A lot of times that just helps reveal things to them.
Well, we're going to go ahead and pivot back to alternative medicine here. Again, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Got a couple of calls about acupuncture. We're going to Ian right now. Good morning, Ian. What kind of experience have you had with acupuncture?
Well, I've had a neck and back injury, and I thought I'd give acupuncture a try, and I could see that there was some benefits to surface feeling on skins and things like that. If you have numbing on your hand or something, they could get sensation back. But it was very good of the acupuncture to be straightforward with me that you need something beyond this. Go to a chiropractor or an actual, you know, spine institute and have them take a look at you or whatever. And I just thought that was very cool that, that there is the divide, you know what I mean?
Yuli, do you have any knowledge about acupuncture at the Botanica?
Yes, we do. We had a person practicing it once that we would recommend for our customers to go to. Not just acupuncture, but also crystal cleansing and some other different areas that she used to work with. Mostly for that, for back aches, for any type of bone aches, muscle aches. The acupuncture is something that is, it's phenomenal. It's anything that has to do with acupuncture is just something that is real helpful, especially for people that work construction, people that are in their 60s, 70s. We have a lady that used to go to one of our crystal cleansers, and she would also do some acupuncture. She just loves her. She loves her. She is 100% sure that she is the only one that can maintain her walking till this day. So, I mean, again, proven or not, she is the result. She is what we see every day. So that's what we believe in.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about acupuncture here. I know you guys want to follow up, but Lucy, you've also had an experience with acupuncture. Lucy, are you there? Good afternoon.
I am.
Great. Can you share your experience with us, please?
Yes. About 35 years ago, I decided to do acupuncture in order to manage hunger for the purpose of losing weight. And over a period of time, I lost 105 pounds. And I've had that healthy lifestyle and all that and, you know, never gained the weight back or anything since then. So I just thought it was interesting to add to the conversation.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call, Lucy. And I think Lucy brings up a really good point, Mark and Dennis and Yuli, that she talks about that she was upkeeping a healthy lifestyle. And I think if you're going to be losing weight, that's probably the best option. But would you consider what Lucy and our previous caller were talking about? Acupuncture has been considered a pseudoscience, yet so many people find relief within the practice. Is there something to acupuncture, or is it the placebo effect?
I think one of the things about acupuncture is it's so interesting to me is that it's almost impossible to control the experiments for acupuncture. So how do you blind an acupuncture test? So a blind study is when the participant doesn't know what's being studied. So you do that so that the participant doesn't, so their cognitive biases don't influence the results, right? So if you tell someone, we're going to test acupuncture, our hypothesis is that it relieves pain, they're going to instinctually try to conform to those parameters, right? So how do you blind it? How do you test it without telling them what you're testing? The other thing is, how do you double blind an acupuncture test? So a double blind test is when the person conducting the test doesn't know what's being studied. And the reason that you do that is because you want to try to mitigate confirmation bias, right? So my funding is determined on whether or not I produce results in this experiment. So I know that I'm going to unconsciously pick results that support my theory. So how do I guard against that? Well, you double blind it. You get someone else to conduct that experiment. How do you have someone double blind an acupuncture test?
You're still going to get pricked.
Correct. Number one, how do you poke someone with needles without poking them with needles? And number two, how do you get someone to poke someone else with needles without telling them to poke them with needles? How do you do that? And so in my head, when we look at the studies, most of the time what you see is that the results that people find from acupuncture are about equal with what we would think placebo should be. So if that's the case, how do we know it's just not a case of correlation and not causation, right? So those two things might just be correlated. Maybe there's a placebo effect happening, but there's no causal agent. The acupuncture isn't causing the pain decrease. It's the belief that the pain should decrease that's causing it.
So, of course, Dennis, the belief behind acupuncture is that we have these lines of chi, if I'm not mistaken, running through your body. Yulia, you can also correct me as well. And by inserting these needles and, I guess, twirling them around, I've never done acupuncture, you're somehow realigning your chi to where it's lined up and you're fine.
So there's a couple blind, not double blind, but there's a couple blind tests you can do. One is you just stick the needles in random locations, because if chi pathways actually mean something, then the precise place you put the needle should have an effect. Every study I've seen in which they were put in random locations shows no difference in the result. You can also have retractable needles where they feel like a prick, but they don't penetrate the skin. Mm-hmm. Those were a little more mixed, but in general, they have just about the same effect.
We have a lot of calls who want to get back to talking about alternative medicine, so we will do that when we come back from the break. You can add your voice to the conversation at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Norma Martinez in for David Martin Davies. We're talking about pseudoscience today, and we're also being joined by Mark Gifford, who's a lecturer in the Writing Corps program at UTSA. He teaches a course on the rhetoric of pseudoscience. Dennis Ugolini is here from the Physics and Astronomy Department at Trinity University, who has taught courses on pseudoscience. And we have Yuli Ortiz, who's manager of Papa Jim's Botanica on South Flores, and we're here answering your calls. We were talking about astrology a little bit earlier, and this is a call I don't think we can pass up. Michelle is an actual astrologer. So, Michelle, good afternoon. What can we do for you? What do you have to add to this conversation?
Well, I'm just kind of curious. I'm actually enjoying the show, and I'm enjoying all of the professors and educated people on there. And in that vein, I'd like to ask what they have actually studied about astrology and what they're actually calling an astrology chart. Who have they studied, and, you know, what are they actually calling an astrology chart?
Okay, Dennis, we'll go to you first.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to give the actual web address on the air, but there's a reasonable website that does birth charts based off of rising sign, sun, moon, all the way down, even what location the asteroid Ceres is, or the dwarf planet, I guess nowadays, Ceres is in. Am I an astrology expert? No, but what does that even mean? I mean, are there astrology texts out there that will give me experimental results and how people born under the same rising sign will experience the same personalities? I think just looking at pairs of twins over time would be enough to refute that. So I do the best I can to make the most honest tests that I can. And one of the things I ask my students to do is I print out all of their birth charts according to this website I found, which is not a debunking site. It's a site that's trying to encourage you to pay money to get more information. I print out a birth chart for each of my students, and I ask them to pick which one is theirs and which one is absolutely, positively not theirs. And the number of people who pick theirs and the number of people who say theirs is absolutely not theirs over the past 12 years is statistically the same.
Do you have anything to add, Mark?
My answer is going to be very similar to Dennis's. It's the research I've done into astrology itself, as far as reading astrology texts, were just the ones that I read growing up. And then when we started this course, you know, I put together a packet of astrological readings and things like that. So that's essentially the research that I've done. But when you look at, or at least for me, when we look at these things, they're so wildly different according to which astrologer you read, that to me, that is a bit curious. Because if one of the basic tenets of science assumes that there is an observable, objective reality that every rational person shares, and if every astrologer has a different interpretation of what astrology is, to me, that's a little curious, because that means it's based on subjectivity and not objectivity. It's based on that person's personal interpretation of it.
And we're learning so much almost every week about the planetary bodies and about our galaxy and about our universe. It's kind of curious as to whether any of those discoveries will have any impact on the future of astrology. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We have quite a number of calls, and we'll be talking about crystal healing here shortly, Yuli, but let's take another call. This is from Mike, who has a question about alternative medicine. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Go right ahead.
I really didn't have a question about alternative medicine. I had a comment about nutrition as an alternative medicine. And, you know, particularly with cancer and I think a lot of diabetes and a lot of other things, nutrition has been proven to have some effects, positive effects. And, you know, when you go to a doctor, they don't mention it. They don't talk about it. And, you know, there's lots of studies that back this up. So I think that's something that should really be brought to people's attention.
Yuli, do you have anything to add?
Yes, he's absolutely right. When you typically go to the doctor will never mention your eating habits or how you can have a better lifestyle when it comes to either diabetes, high blood pressure, any of the above. What we do at the Botanica, the first thing that we mention is if you don't have a healthy lifestyle, then the herbs, the moringa in this case, the guanabana, which are what I had mentioned, one of our most popular items right now, are going to take place of those bad eating habits. If you don't have a good diet, people with diabetes, high blood pressure, they typically don't have a good diet. If they would, they wouldn't be in the place that they are. So the products or the herbs that we recommend are going to substitute somewhat that bad eating habit or that not taking their medication on time or whatnot. Again, it's not going to completely get rid of, the illness that they have, but it's definitely going to help and it's definitely going to bring down those sugar levels. It's definitely going to help them have a better lifestyle. So yes, what he's saying is absolutely true. A lot of people nowadays, they do want to diet and they do want to have a better lifestyle. Right now, and this is something I think it's with our generation, eating, if you go on radio stations, and sorry to say this, if you go on TV, you do see a lot of fast food. So, I mean, when you step into a doctor's office, if that's not one of the things that they mention to you, how are you going to believe or how are you going to know that that's what you're supposed to do when they really don't touch the subject? When you go into a nutrition store, when you go into a natural remedy store, if that's one of the first things that they mention to you, I mean, it kind of makes sense that you would follow that line.
So Yuli, one of the things that you have in your store, and I know also this is something that many people are fascinated with, are crystals. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to us a little bit about what the crystals that you sell may be used for?
Crystals, they're going to be crystal cleansing, there's going to be crystal healing, and there's going to be crystal psychic interpretation. The crystals that we sell, most of them are going to be for cleansing. Now, the cleansing that we typically do or the cleansing that we typically offer at the store, it's going to be spiritual cleansing, healing cleansing. The crystals come into place when a person doesn't want to cleanse with incense. They don't want to do the typical cleansing that was done years and years and years ago.
So it's probably like an alternative to the cleansing that they would have had before.
Exactly.
Okay.
We had years past a lady that was in a shop that had her own space there where she would lay a person and she would put the crystals on certain areas. And this is where the chakras come in. And chakras and their study are...
We don't have enough time to talk about
exactly.
It right now.
But these are points that are touched in your body, and crystals simply do the magic. There's no other way that I can say it, and I know it might sound absurd, but That's just what we believe in, and that's what we practice.
Okay, well, we have one last comment before we have to wrap up the show. This is Rhoda. Good afternoon, Rhoda. What can we do for you today? What would you like to add to the conversation?
Yes, let me shut my radio off. I was listening to the gentleman putting down astrology, because he claims there's no way. It was acupuncture. There was no way to do double blind tests because you can't be inserting needles without knowing you're inserting needles. But that was so off the mark, because you can't do any kind of double blind test for surgeries that you may want to consider in the future. Double blind tests are for medication. If you're going to argue something, argue from a point of relevance and consistency.
Okay, well, thank you, Rhoda. Dennis and Mark, do you have anything to add to Rhoda's comment?
I mean, you could not do the surgery, right? I mean, there's your double blind test.
Well, they've actually done that with orthopedic surgeries on knees. There was a really famous study in Houston where they tried to determine the efficacy of scoping knees. And what they found was that most of the time, people were receiving a placebo effect from it. So, you can.
Well, we received an email yesterday prior to the show's airing. This is by Daniel Brookshire, who sent rather lengthy email. We're only going to excerpt a little piece of it. He says that pseudoscience results from us having lazy brains. We have lazy brains that would rather save some time by looking at our peers and just following the herd. For example, he brought up the example of, I see those people eating this berry. Maybe I should eat it too. Why aren't they eating that one? I'll just eat the one that everybody's eating. And Daniel adds, there are communities that further reinforce these beliefs and reward their fellow believers. Dennis or Mark, do you have any comments about that email?
I completely agree with it, but I think I would add to it, and this is something we talked about before the show began, that there's probably an evolutionary reason for why the default is belief, right? So If you're a believing species and you're jumpy and you're superstitious, you probably will live longer to pass your genes on. So imagine walking in the African savanna, you hear a noise in the bush. Now you got two options. You can think there's something there, and if there's not and you run, you're still alive. So that default of belief is probably something that we evolved with. We evolved to have these beliefs, and sometimes they help us because sometimes there is a lion in the bushes and then we don't get eaten. But if our default is skepticism, well, we got to go check out that bush. We could die and not pass our genes.
Well, we're sadly out of time. We could go on and on about this subject, but we want to thank you, Mark Gifford, lecturer in the Writing Core program at the University of Texas at San Antonio. He teaches a course on the rhetoric of pseudoscience. Dennis Ugolini is the chair of physics and astronomy at Trinity University, who has taught a course on pseudoscience and critical thinking. And we also want to thank you, Lee Ortiz, the manager of Papa Jim's Botanica on South Florida. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much.
I'm Norma Martinez, and for David Martin Davies this week, we're going to come back again tomorrow for another source. Thanks for listening.